Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Alrighty, the week just rushes right along. What had been a beautiful snow-sparkled day a couple of days ago here in the hills and hollers of West Virginia has become that squishy, icky, mud-laden after-death. That's kind of like a great party that, you know, and the next morning you wake up and you see all the empties and people strewn about and you just... Wow, it's not as pretty as it was. But that's okay. There's more on the way. And we're inside and warm and cozy. And we will have us another 3 hours of conversation radio this evening. And I think we'll all be the better for it. Lord knows I will. A couple of places to start this evening just for the fun of it. You know that I am utterly convinced that the sharpest, wittiest satirist on the internet is none other than our own good friend Eugene Finnerman. He of FinnermanWorks.com, F-I-N-E-R-M-A-N Works, FinnermanWorks.com, and your RDA of irony. RDA being, of course, recommended daily allowance. But I don't have to tell you that. Now, if this was a right-wing audience, I'd have to explain RDA, what it means, and then define recommended and daily and allowance. And then, Lord knows, we'd spend the rest of the program explaining what irony means. Because the right wing is, of course, irony-challenged. But Eugene had another one of those brilliant... posts today that I wanted to share with you, especially in light of certain events transpiring lately. On this day in 1910, the moderate bunch. Lord, isn't this a lesson? The moderate bunch. Porfirio Diaz was the best president of Mexico that American business ever had. For just a reasonable, if continual, bribe, railroads, Standard Oil, and mining companies could exploit all that Mexico had to offer. Some of Diaz's amassed fortune was trickling down to the populace, at least to his family, the crew of his yacht, and the teenage girls who seemed to rejuvenate the elderly tyrant. However, that was not really a majority of Mexico's population. Diaz had been a war hero against the French in the 1860s, but 34 years of corruption seemed a sufficient veteran's benefit. By 1910, Mexico was ready to overthrow the outrageous rascal, and the hopes and the grievances of Mexico would center around a most incongruous figure. As a revolutionary, Francisco Madero was the soul of well-mannered moderation. As a leader, he was innocuous rather than charismatic. The hope of Mexico's impoverished masses was a wealthy aristocrat who had been educated everywhere but Mexico. But this education abroad had made him an admirer of societies that were neither feudal relics nor shameless kleptocracies. Even if he did look upon Mexico from an ivory tower, it was with genuine compassion. His liberal principles had earned him several bouts in a Mexican prison. However, having the advantage of being rich in the Diaz days, he could always bribe his escape. While in exile in Texas, Madero issued a call for the Mexican people to overthrow Diaz and reestablish democracy. That happened on this day in 1910, 102 years ago. Rebellions began throughout Mexico, and even the army seemed to loathe to defend the thief-in-chief. 6 months later, Porfirio Diaz was on his yacht, cruising to Europe with his usual contingent of teenage girls. He lived happily ever after. Francisco Madero was the new president. On his private estates, he had genuinely improved his workers' standard of living. He imagined that he could do the same with all of Mexico. Unfortunately, Mexico proved a little more difficult. Moderation seemed to please no one. Revolutionaries wanted more drastic reforms than Madero was prepared to make. Conservatives wanted no reforms at all. Worse for Madero, his innocuous moderation terrified American corporate interests in Mexico. They evidently preferred paying bribes than taxes, and a scrupulous Mexican government might interfere with their business. The American ambassador, Henry Wilson, representing those business interests, initiated his own foreign policy, a military coup to overthrow Madero. Assuming that everyone had his good intentions, Madero had not tried to purge the Mexican army of Diaz's cronies. Unfortunately, a number of generals proved quite nostalgic for the old kleptocracy and were eager to reestablish it. Ambassador Wilson had no trouble orchestrating the coup. Madero had entrusted his security to General Victoriano Huerta. Huerta organized the firing squad. Eugene notes, if you've seen The Wild Bunch, 100 Rifles, or Viva Zapata, you know what happened next. It was a free-for-all civil war. Any general could claim to be the president, and anyone could claim to be a general. The conservatives fought the revolutionaries, and the revolutionaries fought each other. In hindsight, this probably was not the best environment for American businesses. It was impossible to keep track of whom to bribe. By 1920, the civil wars had bled themselves dry, and Mexico had arrived at a political compromise that more or less has lasted to this day, a government of moderate thieves. One of Eugene's readers writes in and says, as the old saying goes, poor Mexico, so far from God, so close to the United States. And Eugene responded, and that old saying was said by Porfirio Diaz, who himself was so far from God and so close to the United States. And now you know the rest of the story. No, Eugene has a way of being trenchant, even if he doesn't know that, for my purposes, he's being trenchant. Because, yes, Mexico is our nearest southern neighbor, but this is the sort of thing that we have done time after time after time after time after time, treating our southern neighbors as if they were some sort of, vassal states. What was the phrase Eugene just used? Feudal relics. Indeed, indeed. And so whether we share a border via the Rio Grande River, or whether one has to go south into the jungles of Guatemala or Honduras, the chicanery and wrangling that resulted in the creation of the nation of Panama, or poor, poor Colombia, where many, many people might yet say, poor Colombia, so far from God and so close to Eric Holder. Poor, poor Colombia, so far from God, so close to Chiquita Brands, so close to Dole, so close to Del Monte, so close to Coca-Cola, so close to Drummond Coal. Poor, poor Colombia. Now, I'm not going to revisit the entire everything I said as far as the nomination of Eric Holder to the Attorney General of the United States the other day. You want to hear it again? You can go to the archives. I'm not trying to be rude, but we have limited time. There's only 3 hours a night. But I did note, I noted an interesting little phrase from Eric Holder. And it deserves to follow him the rest of his days. Comes from a Washington Post article describing Eric Holder's defense of Chiquita Brands, who had gotten sort of caught. You know, the Bush administration hated it whenever they actually bumbled onto an American corporation screwing up. And the Chiquita Brands case was really awful. Because, you see, the Chiquita Brands case started when an anonymous member, or as far, I don't know who the board member was. I haven't seen the name yet. Maybe it's not anonymous. But a member of the board of directors of Chiquita Brands went to Michael Chertoff. No, really, Michael Chertoff. Skeletor himself, who was at that time a deputy attorney general in the Bush Department of Justice. This goes back to when that weird-ass religious fundamentalist, Crisco John Ashcroft, who was hanging curtains over naked aluminum boobies and flipping out about calico cats. This goes back to that time. And a member of the Chiquita Brands board of directors went to Michael Chertoff and said, "Listen, we're paying all this money in Colombia to these right-wing death squads. And I don't, you know, the death squad is on the terrorism list of the United States government, and it's illegal to do this." And Michael Chertoff stuck both fingers in his ears and said, "La la 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 la, not listening, not listening, not listening, not listening, la 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 la." And he said, "I'll get back to you." He never got back to them. Neither did his successor. Because the Bush administration Department of Justice was thrown into complete and utter chaos by virtue of the fact that they suddenly were confronted with the one of their corporate buddies was so far out in right-wing field that they were paying people to murder union activists. And the people doing the murdering were actually already on the terrorism list, and it was illegal. And they had to do something. Enter Eric Holder. I don't know where I am. Eric Holder. Who is, of course, he has been the number two guy in the Justice Department under Bill Clinton. And he then leaves public service and goes to peddle his government access for lots of money. Oh, yeah. I mean, he didn't just go out and hang out a shingle in the county seat. He went to work for one of Washington, D.C.'s most prestigious corporate law firms. And he traded upon his experience and his access at the Department of Justice. So, he's engaged as counsel for Chiquita when the Department of Justice finally has to deal with the fact that they can't just look away while Chiquita Brands continues to hire right-wing death squads and buy them the machine guns and everything so that they can wipe out 4,000 Colombians. It's also, this is also a similar time period when the Bush administration was confronted with the Bush administration Department of Justice, mind you, was confronted with the icky business of Eric Rudolph actually having been caught. Remember the guy, the abortion clinic bomber? And all of a sudden, the Bush administration Department of Justice, these hardcore law and order types, we'll find them dead or alive, are suddenly confronted with actually having to deal with a confessed mass murderer, a confessed terrorist. Well, you know, you and I all know what happened with Eric Rudolph. He was summarily executed faster than even Timothy McVeigh had been. Oh, wait, no, he wasn't. No, the Bush administration Department of Justice suddenly got all squishy and compassionate and found their reserve of Christ-like reverence for life and couldn't quite bring themselves to ask for the execution of a man who gleefully murdered other humans out of his own sense of twisted religious ecstasy. Nope. Eric Rudolph got himself a little sentence of life without parole, mind you, from whence he sits in his cell and to this day writes letters to his victims and people representing his victims, gloating over the fact that he killed theirs and their government wouldn't kill him. Now, that has absolutely nothing to do with Eric Holder, but it puts this in somewhat of a time frame. Because something similar happened with Chiquita Brands. The Bush administration Department of Justice discovered upon cursory investigation, and only the most cursory investigation, that Chiquita's claim that it was paying protection money to this right-wing death squad was a bunch of baloney. It was, in fact, a great big filthy lie. In fact, Chiquita Brands had been actively engaged in paying the AUC to murder, as I noted, 4,000 Colombians. And that's just what Chiquita Brands did. Again, it has nothing to do with Dole or Del Monte or Coca-Cola or Drummond Cole, all of whom are engaged in this kind of bloodthirsty activity in that poor, benighted country. Now, this was just Chiquita Brands. And they couldn't exactly look away. And Chiquita Brands went out and hired what it hoped would be the best fixer that they could find. And the fixer they found was Eric Holder. And Eric Holder, soon to be Barack Obama's attorney general, entered into negotiations with the Justice Department, who really didn't want to punish Chiquita Brands in the first place. I mean, that's George Bush's base, right? That's corporate America. And so there's in the Washington Post article that I read a little bit more thoroughly than I did the other night, there's a reference that says, there was significant debate on either side of this prosecution as to whether it was actually illegal to hire these death squads. After all, they weren't Muslim terrorists or Islamic terrorists or left-wing terrorists. These were right-wing terrorists in Colombia, and that clearly was not what the law was designed to protect against and punish. Only that's not what the law says. The law doesn't draw, in question, does not draw any such similar distinctions. And so there you had it. An unwilling prosecution and a defense counsel who just had to not screw up, and he could see his client's walk. Because the biggest question surrounding this case was not Chiquita Brand's guilt. Chiquita Brand was guilty. They did it. They paid the $1.7 million to the AUC. They had labor organizers and peasants rubbed out if they dared stand on their own hind legs and act like anything other than peasants, serfs, and slaves. They did that. Fathers were dragged from their homes in the dark and still of the night, taken some distance away and machine-gunned, and left in a ditch to putrefy and rot under the hot tropical sun. Speaking of his clients, Chiquita Brands, and the fact that they were fined $25 million, which they were allowed to pay on an easy payment plan of $5 million a year for 5 years, which is not even worth spitting at if you're Chiquita Brands. Speaking of the case, well, and as I said, Chiquita Brands, they are had dead to rights. And the question was whether or not the officers of Chiquita Brands, CEO, CFO, COO, that kind of thing, whether they should do time for hiring terrorists. And therein lies the legitimate, genuine debate referenced in the Washington Post article as to whether or not it was even a problem hiring right-wing death squads. And so, with Chiquita Brands caught dead to right, Eric Holder's job was to keep his silk-suited, caviar crowd out of the jug. And with the connivance of the Bush administration, Department of Justice, he did so. $1.7 million bought the weapons and the murders of 4,000 Colombians. And not one of the people who was responsible for it ever saw the inside of a jail cell or were even personally charged with any crime. Speaking, as I said, of the penalty, Eric Holder, and this is why I brought this up again, because I kid you not, when I read this line, I wept. Now, to be sure, I don't wander around crying at a clear blue sky. It takes a great deal to get me so angry and so aggrieved that tears well up. A great deal indeed. But I read these words from Attorney General Designee Eric Holder. You know, Chiquita Brands was treated pretty harshly. At that point in time, when I read it, I was doing my show prep in another room. And as quickly as I possibly could, I closed the lid on the laptop left the room and walked out into the bright, bitter cold of this November day. And I looked straight up in the sky. And I let the tears puddle in my eyes before they ran down my face. And I wondered, dear God, I wondered, if such a man as Eric Holder had ever shed as many tears as I shed this day for those people, those 4,000 human beings in Colombia, banana pickers, farm workers, who dared stand up and try to organize themselves so as to negotiate for nothing more than better wages with Chiquita Brands, for which you, my fellow Americans, my fellow world citizens, my fellow travelers on this sweet little blue-green time machine hurtling through the universe, for which you might have paid another penny, another nickel, dear God, another quarter on a bunch of bananas. I wondered if Eric Holder had wept once for those 4,000 whose murders he marginalized, whose slaughter he minimized, whose corpses he defamed in saying, you know, Chiquita Brands was treated pretty harshly. Only someone whose soul is long gone can say that a $25 million fine is harsh compared to the murder of 4,000 human beings. Only someone who is in touch with his inner sociopath can say that a $25 million fine payable over 5 years is pretty harsh compared to thousands of widows and orphans whose making he had just gotten done acquitting. I understand that lawyering is a brutal, nasty, vile, boogerish business. I understand that, like John Adams defending the Boston Massacre shooters, our system of jurisprudence says that they are entitled to a zealous defense. I understand that completely. I do. And I am glad that there are, well, were, in this guy's case, Johnny Cochran's, poor fellow's gone, even Brendan Sullivan's, Jerry Spence, on and on, the great criminal defense lawyers of our times, even Clarence Darrow, a hero of mine. I understand that they take on odious clients accused of odious things. I understand that completely. I have good friends who have been active in the defense of people accused of diddling children and have occasionally succeeded in getting them off the charges. One of those individuals even went so far to go ahead and go somewhere else and be charged once again with diddling another child. Of course these people deserve a defense. And if their defense counsel is good enough, he can even get them, or she can even get them acquitted. But that person, whether it be Eric Holder, Jerry Spence, Johnny Cochran, the guy who defended John Gotti, the Teflon Don, those guys don't need to be attorney general and should not be nominated to be attorney general. It would be, for clarity's sake, it would be an entirely different matter if this guy, and maybe he should have been, if this guy had been nominated to be on the Supreme Court of the United States. Having a lawyer with a profound history within the Justice Department, as well as private practice and in corporate law, with that kind of experience going onto the court, real trial experience, yeah, I want that kind of guy on the Supreme Court. As opposed to sterile academic hacks like John Roberts and Sammy Alito and Clarence Thomas and Fat Tony Scalia. A judge who knows what it really means to be a lawyer is going to be a better judge. But this is not that. The office of the Attorney General of the United States is an office charged with enforcing the laws of the United States. And Eric Holder has said that, oh, well, I don't approve of torture. However, his actions indicate that while he may not approve of the United States government doing it, he doesn't have a problem if corporate America does it offshore. Eric Holder has said, I oppose the death penalty. And it would appear, if we take him at his word, that he opposes the death penalty if it is meted out by the United States government. Based upon his actual practice, however, he's not so worried about it if the death penalty is imposed by one of his corporate clients in South America. Because, you see, that's what you get when you go from, say, the Justice Department to trading on your name and former status in the private practice world. It's like wrestling. One day you're the good guy, and the next thing you're out the door, and you go work for the bad guys, relatively speaking. It creates a little bit of, what shall we say, ethical cognitive dissonance, where you can get up in the morning and shave and look in the mirror and say, well, I'm just doing my job, Marge. And compartmentalize your existence in such a way as to keep from having to sit up in the dark and still of the night at 3 a.m. with the little beads of sweat rolling down your forehead and doing everything in your power to keep from going out in the shed and blowing your brains out. We humans are good at that. But that was indeed the line. That was the line. You know, Chiquita Brands was treated pretty harshly. Chiquita Brands does not know the meaning of the word harsh. And you know, it may mean never eating another dadgum banana as long as I live. But I'm funny this way. Ethics matter. Morals matter. Think about it. Every time you go into your grocer's, no matter what the grocer, and you see that box with that big stamp with that Carmen Miranda character on the front with the fruit hat on, and it says Chiquita, and it's all happy looking, and there's a little sticker, a little blue oval sticker on the bananas, and you pick them up going, wow, look there, they're 59 cents a pound today. Well, gone are those days. I remember when bananas were 10 cents a pound. But you pick it up, and you take it through the checkout, and you pay for your bananas. You have just helped to fund some of the most miserable existence on planet Earth. Ooh, hey, bananas are high in potassium and they're heart-healthy, high-fiber foods with an extra dose of murder. That's why things like fair trade are so important. Why, wait a minute. Is it possible that the Attorney General of the United States could have anything to do with the enforcement of our trade obligations, our trade agreements? Coming up on the holiday season, reckon Eric Holder will get a card from his buddies at Chiquita Banana? Chiquita Brands? Hey, Eric, buddy! Thanks for everything! And the postmark will be some little island in the Caribbean or in the South Pacific. We're taking our holiday down here, Eric. Thanks for keeping me out of the striped pajamas. We'll never forget you, buddy. Oh, don't worry. Those were just peasants anyway. They breed like rabbits down there. You know how those people are. What's 4,000 more or less? Huh? Nope. No more Chiquita bananas. This means I have to go and do research to try to be some sort of an informed consumer and find out what, if any, brands of bananas there are that aren't bathed in blood. Hey, Mom, can I have some bananas on my Wheaties this morning? Sure, dear. Do you want O positive or A negative with your bananas? Oh, just whatever the peasant was that was killed that day will be fine by me, Ma. Phew. Wow. Sorry. Now, you know, Chiquita Brands was treated pretty harshly. Gave me the shivers. It did. And it's done it all over again. I thought I'd put it behind me. But I hadn't. But don't worry. Eric Holder will be confirmed as the Attorney General of the United States. And the news networks will continue to say, oh, his is a monumental historic nomination, for he is indeed the first African-American ever to be named to the high post of the nation's chief law enforcement officer. And America will go, oh, isn't that nice? Look, racism's over. I would not care to be Eric Holder in his 3 a.m. moments. But then again, he probably doesn't have them. He is, as I noted, nicely and tightly compartmentalized. Yeah, there it is. Thanks, Cossack. Covington and Burling. Covington and Burling. The law firm. Law firm. So, That's the starting place for this evening. Yeah, it'll get better. It's got to get better. If you want to jump into the program, you're more than welcome to do so. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366. I do that way too fast, I've been told. 877-443-2366. That's 877, the numeral 4, H-E-A-D-O-N. If you want to save us a nickel or a buck, 304-658-3333. That line rings in just the same as the others do. And we take them in the order we receive. And I heartily invite you to participate. Email, of course, rolls into Bob at headonradio.com. And I answer that as often as I get it. And what I can't answer... What I can't answer on air, I answer off. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is the horn.
Daylight come and me want go home. Work all night and I drink a rum.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Stack banana till the morning come.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Come Mr. Tallyman, tally me banana.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Come, Mr. Tallyman, tally me banana.
Daylight come and me want go home.
It's
6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot bunch.
Daylight come and me want go home.
6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot bunch.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Day, is a day, oh. A beautiful bunch, a ripe banana.
Daylight come and we want go home.
Hide the deadly black tarantula.
Daylight come and we want go home.
If
6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot bunch.
Daylight come and we want go home.
6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot bunch.
Daylight come and we want go home.
Daylight come and we want go home. Come, Mr. Tallyman, tally me banana.
Daylight come and we want go home.
Come, Mr. Tallyman, tally me banana.
Daylight come and we want go home.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Welcome to Seat Notes. I'm Tony Seaton. Rupert Murdoch was off on a rant against the news media, claiming that the press herd needed to be thinned of those reporters and editors who had lost the trust of their readers and viewers. What an irony, considering that Murdoch's media empire has done more to undo the trust of media than everyone in the history of media combined. Granted that the media has failed miserably for the decades that I've been attending the news, even the best outlets, like the New York Times, failed to stand up to McCarthyism and the war in Vietnam until late in the game. They also did little to stem the horror of U.S. policies in El Salvador and Nicaragua, and more recently supported the invasion of Iraq. But their sins don't hold a candle to the propaganda and outright lies that flooded out of Fox News and the Murdoch rags. If it hadn't been for their reporting and endorsements, George Bush would have never been named president, and the U.S. would have never invaded Iraq. That said, the Murdoch mouthpieces were preaching to the choir, so they are unlikely to suffer significantly for having lost the trust of their audience. A pox on both their houses. While Murdoch is no more likely to see the light than Rush Limbaugh or the other prevaricating hate mongers, there is something the mainstream media could do to rectify much of the mess they've made. They could fire their partisan polemicists on the op-ed pages and replace them with journalists representing the public's need to know. The Times could start by dumping William Kristol. While Dowd, Friedman, Krugman, and Brooks all took shots at their preferred candidates, Kristol never let facts get in the way of his neocon crusade. For all his deceit, Murdoch is right. We should be able to trust the news. And that's Seat Notes. For more, go to SeatonNotes.com. I'm Tony Seaton.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Some of them are running from lovers.
I hope you don't mind the little interlude. A little Harry Belafonte. A little Jimmy Buffett. Just a few minutes. Let's see. 9 minutes and 18 seconds out of your life to remember 4,000 and counting. Dead people in Colombia that Eric Holder never gives a second thought. Not one. Never gave the first thought. This breaks my heart. You know what a struggle it was for me throughout the election cycle to get caught up in the hysteria of change we can believe in and the hope that was hyped. You know, I dared give myself just the tiniest glimmer. I opened my heart and I let in a little bit of refreshing light to that tiny sprout of optimism that lives within me. I've had to shut that up now. Without a doubt, the Obama administration will do some good things. But this is not one of them. This is a level of equivocation with which I cannot get on board. 4,000 human beings. 4,000 hopes. 4,000 sets of dreams. 4,000 prayers sent up nightly while they were yet on earth, that if they worked just a little bit harder, if they sold away just a little bit more of their time to Chiquita Brands, that maybe, just maybe, maybe, their little ones would have it even a tenth better than what they had. Well, to the extent that the little ones might still be alive, albeit without a father or a mother or both, I suppose they are better off. But remember, throughout that area of South America, Colombia, Peru, Ecuador, trying to organize a union is deadly business. It has the possibility of getting deadly here in the United States, too. What do I mean? Well, I mean, Bernie Marcus. Bernie Marcus is the founder of Home Depot. Uh-oh, here comes another one of those moral moments. You might want to leave the room. Bernie Marcus was on a conference call on Tuesday the 18th. He was on a conference call regarding something that we have talked about quite frequently on this program, namely the Employee Free Choice Act. Now, that piece of legislation was introduced in the last Congress. It was murdered by the Republican Party in the United States Senate and may yet be again. I have no doubt whatsoever that Joe Lieberman will vote with his the Republican fellow thugs when this piece of legislation is considered. It's a relatively simple thing, the Employee Free Choice Act. It says that workers in a workplace can opt, if they so choose, to organize themselves within a union via what is known as a card check agreement. You see, card check, and those three words, card check agreement, that turn American business purple with livid rage. Even though the card check agreement is already a matter of law in the United States. Yeah, it is. I wouldn't lie to you. Go find it out for yourself. In the United States, workers can organize themselves via a card check agreement, which is merely a matter of placing a check mark on a card saying, yes, I want to be in the union, and if a majority does it, then boom, union. And all that union membership brings. Better standard of life, better earnings, health care, pension, all of that. Collective bargaining, not being subject to the whimsy of management, and not being able to be fired at the drop of a hat. That's what comes with membership in a union. And it can be done by card check right now. So what? Well, the difference right now is that unions can be organized in a workplace by card check agreement only if the employer permits it.
Mother, may I?
Only if the employer permits it. Here's a hint. Employers don't permit it. They force a secret ballot election, and they use their powers, powers of the purse, their power of hire and fire, to bring their employees into informational meetings. Hey, team member, it's time for another informational meeting. You be in the break room at 3:30, or don't come back tomorrow. And in these informational meetings, the employer harangues and browbeats the workers. You don't want a union. Oh, unions are terrible. You want to be a communist? You know you'll be a communist if you join a union, don't you? Yeah. Really. That goes on. And the employee is not free to leave the meeting. The First Amendment to the United States Constitution guarantees freedom of assembly. Forming a union is a matter of freedom of assembly. It is a choice to assemble in a certain fashion recognized at law as being completely within the law of this nation. And yet employers are allowed routinely to violate that. And they force a secret ballot election, and they have these dirty little meetings. And in so doing, they attempt to keep the workers from organizing themselves into a bargaining unit that could provide them strength from which to control, have a little bit more control, just a little bit more control of their own destinies. So Employee Free Choice Act is referred to as a card check agreement by the hateful, the business-oriented right wing of our government and some Democrats. And as such, it gets the right wing in an absolute frothing frenzy.
That'll cause the collapse of the economy.
Excuse me, guys. Are you jokers even paying attention to what's going on Wall Street? You guys already caused the collapse of the economy, but, you know, who the hell am I? But there was a conference call. There was a conference call Tuesday among business interests to talk about the Employee Free Choice Act. And this is one of those reasons that Eric Holder is a much more momentous choice than just a few thousand Colombian peasants dead and stinking in the sun. Ooh, shame on me. I'm going to, after the show, trust me, I'm going to wash my mouth out with soap for that. That was sarcasm, folks, and it didn't suit me. Bernie Marcus, co-founder and former CEO of the Home Depot, was on a conference call about the Employee Free Choice Act. How did he describe the Employee Free Choice Act? He called it the demise of civilization. Really? Workers organizing and banding together is the demise of civilization. That's right. According to Bernie Marcus, co-founder and former CEO of Home Depot, at which I will never set my foot, said that the Employee Free Choice Act will cause civilization to collapse. Ah, Lord, I wish I knew you were listening tonight, Wayne. You'd be having a hissy.
"This is the demise of civilization," he said. "This is how a civilization disappears. I'm sitting here as an elder statesman, and I'm watching this happen, and I don't believe it." He said the unions will organize workers in industry after industry. He said that he's been playing a sort of corporatist Paul Revere, trying to get in touch with all the nation's CEOs, but they're not listening. He said, "This is as important as anything that's ever happened to these companies. And they're not reacting, and they're not fighting. The old-time fighters are gone. You know, the old-time fighters that paid death squads to go in and kill 4,000 Colombians. Oh, wait, that's the wrong country. No, the old-time fighters who hired trains to drive through hollers in West Virginia and machine-gun pregnant women when the miners dared to stand on their hind legs and demand to be treated like humans. The old-time fighters are gone." But Bernie Marcus wasn't done. No. This man needs to be taken away somewhere. I don't know, maybe a little island with a nice view of the sea and given a drink and a coconut with a little umbrella and some fruit in it and an injection of Thorazine, maybe. Because he's nuts. Listen to what he said next. This was on a conference call. This is all recorded. "If a retailer has not gotten involved with this, if he has not spent money on this election, if he has not sent money to Norm Coleman and these other guys, he should be shot. They should be thrown out of their goddamn jobs." Really? This crazy old bastard's advocating shooting other CEOs who might not agree with him. What do you reckon he thinks about the people that might stand up and organize a union? Welcome to Colombia! How do you think Eric Holder will respond to that? Man, he's got a nice house and a sweet car, and the kids' education's taken care of or whatever else because of a corporation that hates unions. How's he gonna enforce the law? How's he gonna enforce the law against a thug like Bernie Marcus? Has anybody made known to the AFL-CIO or SEIU or any of the other organizations, has anybody made known to them that Eric Holder is a company man, that he's a company lawyer, and that they can expect about as much justice for working people in this country out of Eric Holder as Sunday morning can expect reverence from a hog? That's how crazy it's going to get. It's going to get ugly. Of course, I told you this a long time ago. Uglier and uglier and uglier. Because these people are not going to just go away. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the Bernie Marcuses of the world, they don't give up, because most of the time they can beat it with murder. And most of the time they get away with murder.
This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
That's the place where I traced my bloodline, and it's there I read on a hillside gravestone, you'll never leave Harlan alive. Oh, my
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
I guess Thursday night is my night to ramble. And ramble I will. I think I usually prep for a program with about 6 hours worth of material. Usually get to one story, but we're actually going to do two or three tonight, it looks like. Let's see. Well, suffice to say that I get this way about things that touch upon working people and the rights of working people because of what unions meant to the fact that I exist. No great-granddad, no granddad, no uncles fighting for the right to organize. No me. Then, you know, I'm not some sort of big egomaniacal sort or anything, but I'm still working on making a difference. I'm still working on putting meaning behind the life that I was given. And that life was given me, in large part, because of unions. And I can't turn away from that. And I hope I never do. Being a West Virginian, I live in a colony of America. I live in a place that isn't really America. But you know that. You know that West Virginians have no essential human right to breathe clean air. You know that West Virginians have no essential human right to drink clean water. You know that West Virginians have no essential basic human right to not have our communities destroyed and our loved ones poisoned. If we were really Americans, we'd have those rights. The fact that we don't proves that we aren't. It's not just West Virginians, it's Appalachian in general. You know, if you want to register to post at some blog, you'll have to fill out the little registration thing, you know, name, password, where the hell are you? And I hit one of those drop-down menus today, and it occurred to me, because I saw, oh, God, arugula, Antilles, lesser nethermost Baluchistan, Algeria, and on and on and on, and you know, eventually United States of America was there. And, you know, I'm kind of a hard ass. I looked all the way through that list, where the hell does it say Appalachian? Because that's what I am. Now, I'm not going to go all Joe Vogler on you or anything and talk about the glaciers being burning the hell pits or any of that crazy crap. But I'm an Appalachian. Because with the exception of you listening to this program, most of the rest of America doesn't think of Appalachian people as fully American. At best, they think of us in tar paper shacks with outhouses and an aversion to wearing shoes in temperatures above freezing. And we're a joke. We're a big old funny ha-ha. Look at them stupid hillbillies. They let them damn coal companies blow up their homes and they won't even do nothing about it. What a bunch of dummies. We're not thought of as Americans.
We're plenty good to go and die in American wars. On a per capita basis, West Virginia has given more to the wars of the United States than any other state in the Union. We're good enough for that. But we're not good enough for full citizenship. And it's just a fact. So I come from stiff-necked, leathery people who didn't brook a lot of corporate crap in their past. And I'm not inclined to brook it now. And I'm a little pissed off about this next one. Oh, it's nothing. It's not any big deal at all. And it probably labels me as a raving hypocrite because I'm a tobacco addict. But the fine folks at RJR Nabisco, they have a cigarette and an Oreo, why don't you? You know, corporate America. Fine folks at RJR Nabisco have come up with a new way to make it possible to enjoy your nicotine. Yeah, sure have. It's called Snus. S-N-U-S, Snus. These are little refrigerated tobacco pouch products. And they come in original frost and spice flavors. And they're being test marketed in Morgantown, West Virginia. And, is it Morgantown and either Charleston or Huntington? These are designed for kids. You know, Agnes and I, we let our kids participate in something called RAZE, R-A-Z-E. And it's like a sort of school club type program that encourages children not to get involved with tobacco. And they enjoy it. And hopefully it will serve as the reinforcement they need to never pick up a nicotine habit. And I've tried to reinforce it myself by saying, kids, I'm a junkie. I have to get up and leave rooms to go feed my habit. You don't want that in your life. Yeah, they're test marketing this garbage in Morgantown and Charleston, West Virginia. Why? Well, because the rest of the world is getting away from tobacco, but West Virginia, good old West Virginia, we sort of put some of our misery behind us with a nicotine habit. What is Snus? It's a refrigerated tobacco product in which the nicotine has been manipulated to make it more easily absorbable into the mucous membrane lining of the mouth so that young folks can walk around in clubs. Because, see, we've enacted non-smoking rules in all public places in this state. And so let's say you're a college kid in Charleston or a college kid at WVU in Morgantown. And you're in the club and you're dancing the night away and you can't have a smoke. Well, what Camel wants you to do, what RJR Nabisco wants you to do, it is RJR Nabisco. Yeah, I do believe so. Yeah, well, RJ Reynolds Tobacco Company. They want you to be sitting there dancing, standing, not sitting there dancing. That's only in the strip clubs where you get a lap dance. They want you to be standing there dancing the night away and reach into your pocket and tuck one of these. See, this isn't like the traditional stuff, the pouches or the snuff or whatever that you know, a little pinch between your cheek and gum lasts a long time. Remember those ads? This one you tuck up in your upper lip, because it generates less saliva and less need to spit tobacco juice. And you get yourself a real good nicotine rush. This stuff is even being marketed at women. And I guess it kind of has to be, because if you want them using it in the clubs where they're a-dancing, you want him to look at her with that longing glance, and you want her to look at him with that longing glance, and you don't want either one of them sort of out of balance with a weirdly distended upper lip. You want them to both have that weirdly distended upper lip. The Great American Smokeout was just a couple of days ago. And maybe some people quit. I wasn't one of them. By the way, if you go and, even though those standards are somewhat relaxed, if you go and you pick up a package of hot dogs in the grocery store and you read the label, well, like say you pick up a package of Hebrew National, it says beef. Now, it doesn't state the FDA, the USDA regulation. It says may contain up to 0.1%, you know, rat feces. But it at least tells you what is on the surface in the weenie. You can pick up any cigarette package in America or any tin of snuff, anything, and you will not see the ingredients. Frankly, because the packages are small enough that they couldn't accommodate all of the ingredients. So heaven only knows what has been done to this tobacco to manipulate it in such a way as to provide a nicotine rush without providing the concomitant tobacco juice and spit. Snus. It came, by the way, from Sweden. The camel found it over there. It's got 5 milligrams of nicotine per gram of tobacco. And that's twice the amount of nicotine in a previously test-marketed product. In other words, it's clear that they have manipulated the nicotine content of the tobacco. Bruce Adkins is director of the Division of Tobacco Prevention in the West Virginia Bureau of Public Health. He said, here in West Virginia, 4,000 people die every year from tobacco-related illness. So to break even, just to break even, the tobacco companies have to have 4,000 replacement users every year. Just to break even. Let's see, what are some of the other things Camel have come up with? Camel's come up with Camel Sticks, a smokeless and spitless product. They've come up with Camel Orbs. Hey, give me an orb, Eustace. No. And Camel Strips. All of these are products that can be dissolved or chewed and swallowed. Yeah, I want to do that. Cigarette habit's bad enough, thanks. And, of course, they bring it here to test market it. Because, you know, the stupid hillbillies Like I said, we're not Americans. They're not test marketing this in Washington, D.C. They're not test marketing this in L.A. or New York. They're test marketing this on the disposable Appalachians. It's that simple. ~19.8% of adults in the United States smoke. That's as low as it's been in 80 years. That number's 27% in West Virginia.
Well, hell, they're all there still. Let's see if they'll try this.
They're dying anyway. I mean, they got all that. They got all that toxin and poison from mountaintop removal. They'll never see. They'll never notice the poison from this. They're already on a death sentence. Oh, what kind of fun can you get from smokeless tobacco? Oh, how about esophageal cancer? How about stomach cancer? And how about that real winner, pancreatic cancer? Oral, esophageal, and gastric cancers. And a study in Sweden also said smokeless tobacco doubles the risk of pancreatic cancer. All the women who have watched that ultimate chick flick, Dirty Dancing, and sort of swooned at Patrick Swayze. Seen a photo of Patrick Swayze lately? He's disappearing before our very eyes, poor fella. Pancreatic cancer. Pancreatic cancer, they don't even work on a cure for it because it's by the time you know you've got it, you know you've got a death sentence. You don't get well from pancreatic cancer. You don't go into much of in the way of remission from pancreatic cancer. But snus, it'll double your chances of that joyful ride. Thanks, corporate America! You know, what are they going to come out with next? The gun manufacturers will come out with a gun with a barrel pointed directly at the shooter? And I don't know, if this stuff catches on, I'm going to have to hit some of the club scene and see some of those youngins looking longingly into each other's eyes with some sort of a big distended pouch in their upper lip. I remember a long time ago, a young woman looking at me and saying, you know, kissing a smoker is like licking an ashtray. To which I replied, you know, kissing a self-righteous person is like licking a mongoose's ass. But this is something to see. Because you know what? It'll succeed. It'll succeed. They got this marketing with this beautiful blue background, and because it's a refrigerated product, I don't know how you're supposed to carry the refrigeration with you, but it's because it's a refrigerated product, there's all these beautiful beads of condensation on it, and it just looks, oh, it's snus frost. Need me a snus, Mabel. But you know what? Snus may turn out to be good for the shareholders of R.J. Reynolds Tobacco. And remember that where business ethics are concerned, what's good for the shareholders is the only thing that matters. Whether it's mountaintop removal and Massey Energy or Consol Energy or the premeditated murder propagated by R.J. Reynolds and L. Tria, that used to be Philip Morris, and the rest of those thugs. Or whether it's, bananas that are soaked in blood. Whether you can see it or not, when you pick up your bananas at the grocery store and you see that little Chiquita, that cute little sticker on the fruit. The only thing that matters is it good for the shareholders? Was it good for you? It was good for me. Good for us. We killed some people. That's the America we live in. The bailout for GM is being contemplated, not because it's good for you or good for me, and frankly, not because it might or might not be good for the retirees and the current workers of GM and Chrysler and Ford. It's being asked for because it'll be good for their executives and their shareholders. It's astonishing. This is 8 years of George Bush has broken us almost beyond the ability to come back from it. And that's a frightening thing for anybody who hopes to be on the planet for any kind of extended period of time. Frightening indeed. So, then again, it's also not at all surprising. Is this a, well, no, this isn't, how the rest of the night is going to go, I promise. I'm trying to find something to giggle about, and it's bound to be there somewhere, I hope. And I apologize for just going on at length about this. But every now and then, I get smacked right upside the head with how poisonous corporate America is. And how expendable corporate America thinks that we are. And there is no outrage, no rage, greater than the rage of those who are impotent to do anything about the outrages committed against them. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Oh, Bob.
I know.
Oh, come on. Life survived a couple of great extinctions, and it'll survive George W. Bush.
Yeah, but will we? I mean, you know. With the exception of Sarah Palin looking out her window and seeing the tyrannosaurs cavorting on the ice, life survived. Dinosaurs didn't. Life survived. Neanderthals didn't.
Dinosaurs survived. Neanderthals did survive.
Well, yeah, they turned into birds and alligators.
You're a Neanderthal. The troglodytes are still here. That's the Republican Party. You know, and dinosaurs are still here. That's the bird that squawks and gives me aneurysms. We got this. It's just birth. It's, you know, and birth out of a birth canal always hurts, and it squeezes that little sponge that we got up top with the, it's got all them crazy kooky chemicals in it.
Yeah.
And I don't know what else you can say about that. I mean, that's a pretty heavy deal, but that's about what it is.
Yeah.
You know, not for nothing, these fools, these parasites, that's what they are. These guys are a terminal parasite, these corporate lords of the universe. These guys, they're apparently, like, essentially what we need is we need to do like the mountain gorillas do, where they eat that grass and they roll it with their tongue, you know, and they make it like this weird little roll and they swallow it. And the way that they roll it with their tongue and the way the grass is, it catches the snags, little parasites, and then they can pass them out of their body. So what we need is we need some little grass rolls. We need to pass these parasites out. We need to stop giving them their money. We need to do, I heard a great idea. This is just a fantastic idea, and I really like this idea, and I know you're going to like this idea, and you very well may have had it, and you may very well have been the one that uncovered it. The idea that I like is now that this frickin' GM in Ford Town is like $2. The government should buy it all. The union, why doesn't the
Nah, Tom Hartman's responsible for that one.
Don't give... Well, that's a good idea.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we can. I think we can buy Detroit right now for a lot less than $25
billion. Seriously, buy them. And then we can, then we got some time, then we can do something about it. Then we can go, you and you and you and you and you, fire. Your golden parachute is this big brick. And then kick them out of the window. You know, not that I don't want anybody to get hurt, but these guys are unbelievable. And I tell you, I don't know, I'm sure I told you this story quite some time ago. I worked with a guy who worked with a guy who brought me to a dinner with a guy who used to work with Lee Iacocca. And he happened to be at the time when I had this dinner with him, and basically they ain't kidding. And Eric, I know we've been hearing more and more about these auto executives and how they drink. Like, I can just say that from this guy and the way he drank, I wasn't even kidding. The guy must have drank a fifth while we were sitting there. And it was ridiculous. Yeah, it was ridiculous.
And got up and walked straight out the door, I'll imagine.
Seriously. Seriously. It almost makes you...
It's like end-stage alcoholism.
It's either that or it makes you buy into that David Icke, these people are reptilian kind of thing.
Yeah, Alien Nation, where they could drink all the liquor, but a sip of soured milk would, yeah.
Yeah, don't give them
the soured milk.
Then they get all crazy. But anyway, this guy told me this. Now, this was in 1997, 98, when I had this dinner. And it was a good four-hour, intimate little setting, and... I was the assistant manager, so I got to go with the other general managers and kind of sit there. And, you know, I was like the little protege for the local dealership. And he started, you know, talking about this and this and that. Basically, this guy, the dealership that I worked for, was in trouble. It was a dealer development dealership, which is for what Ford basically does to make them. It's like how they greenwash, but they race wash. Essentially, they'll give a black guy or a Hispanic guy or, you know, somebody, an Asian guy, and they'll give them a dealership or they'll cut them a deal and they'll own 51% of it and give the guy 49%, but then they'll say, we have X amount of minority-owned dealerships. Okay, but usually these are dealerships that are just like nobody wants, and like usually in terms of these dealerships, it's always like a conglomerate of guys. It's like one guy owns 10 different dealerships, and, you know, even if it's a different name, it's still owned by, it's just a big racket. That's their corporate world. And I just got off the phone with Newegg. Oh my God, you won't only want to know about that. But anyway,
share, because
let me just get the fifth of, he's drinking good stuff. You think he was drinking Bombay, but, you know, that's good stuff.
It's, oh, it's the Sapphire.
Yeah, see, you and me, we get along. But anyway. You don't drink.
You know, I got a recipe the other day, in my email, and this will resonate with you. I got to see if I can find it. It was a wonderful recipe. And let's see. Here it is. It was my tofu lasagna recipe.
Yeah.
Here it is. Cook the pasta with a bouquet of bay and 1 tablespoon of fennel seeds done up in cheesecloth. Sweat an onion and a green pepper, julienne, for 5 to 6 minutes. Don't overcook. Do a baking sheet worth of salted oiled eggplant, sliced long, less than a finger thick. Expect to drain the tomatoes if you do pre-cook the pasta. Drink the strained tomato juice with gin, no matter the time of day. Ditch the ricotta.
No!
That's what the tofu's for. Easy.
Okay, well...
But, yeah, drink the strained juice with gin no matter the time of day.
Okay.
A little lime juice, maybe? Yeah.
A little hot pepper, a little hot sauce. Okay. So, anyway, basically, yeah, I like that recipe. But we'll sit there and talk what this guy's doing to me. He's telling me this, and he's like, he's looking. This is when Bill Clinton was still in office. And he's saying, he's like, you don't understand what's coming. Okay. Now, a lot of what, in terms of my prophecy, a lot of it's based off of what this guy said to me. Sure, some of it's psychedelic experience, but, you know, honestly, this is based on this conversation that I had with this guy who would be, if anything, I mean, he was the closest to an insider in terms of this world that most people ever even get close to. And, You know, he was telling me some really scary, haunting things about where we were going to be, and that just happens to be where we are right now. And he said it's going to be so bad that it's going to make, I don't know, you're talking scary, I don't tell you what this guy told me. He's like, it's going to make the Great Depression of old look like a party, a picnic, he said. He's like, and the thing is that the only reason I'm kind of really bringing this up is because these bastards knew this. If he knows this, right, he's one of them, you know, executives up there in the chain of command, okay, and he came to this dealership to show the owner that, you know, that Ford cared about him and all this other stuff, okay, and like, you know, oh, they sent this huge guy with this big stick, who, you know, old industry veteran, okay, and so they sent him, and he went around kind of making this guy feel comfortable. And guess what? That dealership's not in existence anymore. But anyway, he basically told us this horror story. Well, the owner was not sitting there. It was just him and the managers that had their own friends and friends of the dad, and that's why they brought him out, and they brought me out, and telling me and these guys these horrible stories about basically where we are right now. Now, that still, I mean, reverberates with me, and, you know, it's hard to believe we've been through 8 years of this scuzz.
Yeah.
But we have, and we...
Murder, mayhem, death, destruction.
Murder, mayhem, and total, yeah, death and destruction. And, you know, I just gotta believe that, you know, no matter what, no matter who's really pulling these strings here, no matter where this, you know, if this is some sort of laid-out plan or... You know, and it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, you know, it goes hand in parcel. And, I mean, Naomi Klein isn't the first one to talk about this. You know, I'm not the first one. You're not the first one. None of us are. I mean, we're not the first people to talk about, you know, you sit there, it's called problem, reaction, solution. You know, they set up the problem. They already have the solution. And so they just... And then they feed, and they do this constantly. They do this constantly. They'll create a problem. They say, this is what the solution is, and then we fall for it because we get afraid. Fear is the mind killer. And that's what they count on. They count on...
Hey, Charlie Brown, come kick this football.
Exactly. Hey, buy duct tape and plastic wrap and suffocate your whole family. That's horrible. I mean, that's so horrible, I don't even know how, it doesn't even really register with how horrible it is.
You know, you can't help wondering, Albert, you bring something up there that I've wondered about in the past, and you know, this is all kind of free form, and a lot of the weird little thoughts that pass through my brain never make it out over the wire.
Mm-hmm.
But when was it that Tom Ridge told us to duct tape and plastic wrap our homes? Was that 2001, 2002, 2003?
From my recollection, it was shortly after the anthrax attack, which was about a month after the 9/11 attack, so it was like October.
Well, I got to thinking about Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
You reckon any of those people that suffocated in their homes had duly duct-taped and plastic-wrapped their homes? I've wondered about that in the past. Not that the for-profit media would have ever told us about it, but I wonder if any search and rescue teams went into any homes that maybe any grandmas lived in, and the windows were duct-taped and plastic-wrapped. Because, you know, in 90 degrees with no power and no air conditioning, not even so much as a fan, it's going to get bad real quick. And I've just wondered that from time to time. But that's the weird little places my brain goes, and certainly not your fault.
No, well, I take blame for it. I mean, you know, I just got to say that, you know, we do have, you know, we can evolve. You know, it's never too late to evolve. You know, it's never too late. You know, it's like why I think, you know, some storylines are very intimate, I think, to the species, which is why that they become commercially successful. You know, things like Star Wars and things like Star Trek and things like the X-Men and, you know, all these kinds of things that, and books and this and that. And right now I'm waiting for my wife to get all done with it, but Ishmael, and kind of know what it's about and kind of, you know, figure upon it. But, you know, I like thinking that kind of esoteric stuff and, you know, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like it's more like the whole collective part is a bigger role than most people really.
Well, that's like that moment when I had to close the lid on the laptop and just walk out of the room and go out into the cold, clear air, to the extent that it's clear around here, and just look up at the sky and think about those 4,000 dead Colombians and more, and realize that the number of people who had given that much time as I was, I'm not saintly or anything, but that the number of American people who had spent that much time thinking about those people was a distinct minority of this nation, to say the least.
Yeah.
Because we haven't figured out yet that the borders are disappearing. We haven't figured out yet that the barriers are falling. We haven't figured out yet that the world is literally changing before our very eyes. Some for good, some for the worse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fair trade people, they're trying to do it for the good. The Chiquita Brands of the world, they're hell-bent on making it worse.
Mm-hmm.
But how many of us think about it? You know, and it's the reason I mention that is because of what you just said about that whole consciousness-raising sort of trying to put the rays out there and feel. And, you know, please don't send me any astrology charts for my, but really just trying to extend consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know what? Those 4,000 dead, Albert, they didn't speak my language, or more properly, I didn't speak theirs. They lived decidedly harder, more difficult, more impoverished lives than me. But, you know, Albert, they're still human beings.
Oh, and they fought for the same things you would fight for. And, you know, I mean, that could be you. And that's an important, I think that's an important distinction.
No man is an island unto himself. I am a part of the continent. I am a part of the all.
That's right. Everything is you. You are Chiquita Banana, too. Because you've purchased Chiquita Banana.
Damn right. Blood's on my hands.
It is. And just knowing that, not to get a little too corny, but knowing that is half the battle. You know, it's like, and it's just the storyline to me is haunting. Man, call me a dork. I don't care. But Dune, once again. You know, when she had the Gamja bar to his neck, and his hand was in that black box, and he basically, you know, she's, what's in here? She says, pain. Now, what that whole test was about to determine if he was an animal or a human.
Yeah.
Him overcoming that pain, knowing that he was going to have this pain, and not knowing if he was going to pull out a rotten, you know, a fleshy, charred stump of a hand, and going through that, and actually having the consciousness to be aware of this situation, is why he lived through that situation, and that became, you know, more deep. But anyway, yeah, just that little scene has been playing around in my head a little bit.
Plays around in my head all the time, Albert.
Exactly. It's the future, Bob. We're going to paint the future. But, you know, not for nothing, there are people out there. I mean, you know, like, you may not have a co-op in West Virginia yet, but you know what? You could. You could have a co-op out there. And, you know, they're even trying to corporatize that. They're trying to turn that into a big corporate, because the corporations see how the organic food sectors are growing. And they see that kind of stuff, and you know how they are. They're after the dollar, and they're after the marketing dollar. And, wow, that's,
and if they can greenwash it, more the better.
Exactly. But I'll tell you what, the thing is and it's just with everything else, it's the same kind of thing with the car, you know, the car company and the UAW and the unions. The unions better wake the hell up. You know, if these people are paying their dues, man, they better be buying some stock. They better get a controlling share. They better be doing something. I mean, when we're talking about $2 a share, $1.80 a share, $1.80 a share. Now, if you want to,
I could own 20 shares of any of them for what I spend in a couple of months on Powerball.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Exactly. It's ridiculous. And now, in terms of co-ops, all right, it's a co-op where the people that shop there own it, and the people that work there own it. They own it. It's a union-type thing. It's a, everybody there owns it. You take a share in what you get? Sure, sure. No doubt about it, Bob. You ever come out and visit me, I'll take you and show you. All right? The food is more expensive. I pay to feed my kids bananas. I'll pay $1.15 a pound. Okay? But guess what?
There ain't no blood on them.
There's no blood on them, and they taste delicious. They taste like bananas are supposed to taste like. They don't harvest them when they're green and then ripen them in the boat. These things are just about almost ripe when they give them, when they get sent over here. There may be a black spot or two, but because they're organic and because of the way they're grown, there's a black spot, but it doesn't go through the skin into the flesh. It doesn't leave a bruise in there. When you open that banana up, the skin is thicker. There's a little, they used to have a little a sign they usually do. They have a little sign about the organic bananas and, you know, how they, sometimes they give bananas away to zoos and stuff. Well, the zoo handlers would notice how the Chiquita bananas that, you know, everybody gives monkeys bananas, but the Chiquita bananas, they would give these, you know, chimpanzees and so forth, they would peel them first, and then they would eat them. But the organic bananas, they just eat them. No peeling. Okay?
Yeah. Now,
think about that. Yeah. You think about, you know, they talk about, we need bananas for 19 cents a pound. We can't afford bananas for 19 cents a pound. We can't afford it as life. Not as a country, not as a union worker or non-union worker or, you know.
Or somebody setting up the family budget for the week. No. But, no. And that's, wow, that's one of those big doors. That's one of those barn doors that you just opened, Albert, because it's the discussion about externalized cost.
Exactly.
It's not just the externalized cost of coal. It's not just the externalized cost of relying on outdated technology for our transportation needs. It's the externalized cost of our food. Those, you know, go to your local Taco Hell. No, really, don't. Take my word for it.
Mm-hmm.
The tomatoes that are chopped onto a taco
taste like nothing.
And they look like, I mean, they, under the best of circumstances, they're sort of a sad pinkish color.
Mm.
Because, again, they've been picked as green as little green apples in the spring.
Mm-hmm. And then you have people telling you, like my wife, I hate tomatoes. What do you mean you hate tomatoes? How can you hate tomatoes?
I hope she's not listening.
No, she can. No, she knows this. I said, what do you mean? How could she hate tomatoes? You know why? Because all she's ever had are those tomatoes.
Are styromatoes.
Exactly. And if all I ever had was those tomatoes, I'd hate that too. But it's even more so. It's even more so in terms of, you know, like my children. They won't eat that stuff. Wait, hang on 1 second. What is it?
My ADR for bathroom.
Oh, she'll live, I'm sure. One day she'll get old and she'll be working in the field. And
no. I put cream.
You put cream? Okay, good.
Very good.
Oh, these kids. Oh my! They always say.
I love our little interludes with your daughters. They're beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Oh, trying to kind of get them. Daddy's on the phone. Go. But they're getting to be so precious. They're helping each other. Their back hurts or this or that. But speaking.
Don't worry. You've got about 3 more years of that. And then reality will kick in. Why couldn't you have just had one of me? I hate her. Trust me.
No, they already do that.
No matter how hard you try, it happens. It happens.
Yeah. Well, that's like that. Like they know there's certain things they can't say to each other. That's just me. There's certain things they can't say to each other.
Like hate?
That's one of them.
Yeah. I raise a real ruckus about that word.
Oh, that's corner. That's corner. Daddy turns into drill instructor. Like, it's bad. You go, oh, my God, that's Albert. Yeah, that's me. Because it's just one of these things that I tell them, the only two people you have in the world are each other. I mean, and really.
Oh, this is getting creepy.
Well, that's.
No, that's because that's the lecture I give. You don't have anybody else in the world but each other. Your mother and I will be gone someday. No one will love you if you each don't love each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that usually follows with the puddling up and the hugging and the I love you. Yeah. And that's what's supposed to happen because, you know, I mean, it's not just, oh, God, Dad's giving us lecture number 622. Just beat us, Dad. No, you get the lecture.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
4 years old, you're going to hear this. You'll hear this your whole entire life because that's important. And I just got to even stray a little bit in terms of that barn door. You know, this kind of stuff is even, just to kind of backtrack what we were chatting about, this is kind of, it's more about in terms of our lives. I mean, our life as life. You know, we can't afford to spray chemicals all over the lungs of the earth. You know, we can't sit there, because that's where bananas grow. And you know what kind of pesticides they need for that. And, you know, that pesticides and all this stuff, it is all connected. And I don't mean to sound like, Albert from iHeart Huckabee's at all. But, there is a parallel there. But
well, there's one to clean off the monitor.
But it's all about oil. No, it does have a lot to do with this kind of sustainable. It's about being sustainable. It's about, I love how the Republicans love to talk about balancing the budget. Or you remember when they were like, they liked to give that mouth lip service. And they'd sit there and...
you remind me of a great clip from the days of John Fox's 5-Day-A-Week show. When he just about, I think his head came as near exploding as it has ever come. And he was screaming about... I don't mean screaming. Yeah, okay, I think there was a little screaming involved. But it was the story about, some corporate fat cat saying, well, I'm not sure if the economy can withstand any drive to reduce global warming. And there was poor John with, little bits of brain matter bursting out of his ears and into his headset. No globe, no world, no economy. No world, no economy. No world, no economy. It's not that hard to get your head around.
Who let these idiots in charge? That's what I got to say.
Yeah.
Why do we give these people power? I don't understand this. Why? I mean, and I know that you and I are just little tiny. We're little ants, right?
No, we're the little things that feed the ants. We're smaller than that.
Oh, that's right. We're the little aphids, the honeydew aphids.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good little thing for us. But, maybe we got to start eating some poison plants or something. Maybe we just got to start chowing down on, nightshade or something. And because these guys, they're parasites. I mean,
I know. You remind me of my good buddy who got the highfalutin liberal arts degree in history so he could go back and farm corn in Athens, Illinois. And he told me, he said, what I love to do in the spring? I said, what? He said, I'll be out there. No kidding. He said, I'll be out there in my air-conditioned John Deere with an Abitape going on the in-cab cassette deck. And he said, I'll stop the tractor and climb down for a minute. Just get me a handful of morning glory seeds. Climb back in, he said, makes the rest of the day's plowing or disking or conditioning. It just makes it all go by so much more interestingly. And Abba gets real good.
It might. It very well may. I don't know if I'd want to stare out of those eyes, but...
He was a lovely guy.
No, that's awesome, actually. It's funny that they should be doing that kind of stuff. And, more people should. We got to get them 55-gallon drums into the water supply now. But I just got to, we just got to really realize that these people are parasites, and they're not, they're the bad kind of parasite. Like, there's a really interesting book. If you ever see it, pick it up and just look at it. It's a book about parasites. And it shows pictures and images of parasites like that symbiotically, coordinate with their host. Like there's a parasite that gets into the mouth of fish,
mm-hmm.
eats its tongue, but then it replaces it with its own body. And really, it doesn't ever hurt the fish as far as you can tell. And the fish doesn't mind that it's in there because it acts as the fish's tongue. It just wants a couple of little scraps and scraps of food as it goes on, and it doesn't really do any damage to the fish other than replacing the fish's tongue with itself. Now, there are symbiotic type of parasites like that, and the whole point of being a parasite...
That bird that rides on the back of the rhino, and yeah.
Yeah, well, exactly. If you're going to be a good parasite, you're going to want to make sure you don't want to be a pathogenic parasite. You want to be a parasite that helps your host survive.
Yeah, you don't want to be lethal.
Exactly. But these guys, that's what they are. And so you got to say this. And I know I'm putting the foil hat on right now, my Faraday hat. What is their plans for us? You can't tell me that this is a big shock, because I've had guys that are these guys that are sitting in front of Congress saying, please, please, please. Right. On their private jets. I like that. That was good.
About wasn't that precious?
That's something to get tattooed on your neck or something. But, you know, you sit there and you look at that.
It's tattooed on the back of their neck.
You sit there and you look at that kind of stuff, and, you know, these guys are such clowns. Right? And, like, they're just thieves. They're like, oh, the bankers got some. Let's go get some. That's really what they did. You know, man, if you wanted to be sustainable, Bob, if I give you, I guarantee you, here's the deal. I win the lotto, I win the Powerball, the horn is getting a chunk of it, okay? And I bet, I'm just willing to bet, that the chunk I give you will last forever. For as long as it lasts.
It'll last,
and you'll try to make it grow and everything else, because you realize that this stuff has to be sustainable. You know, you don't just, you know, if you plant a garden, people, right? I know everybody gets lazy and they just want to buy new seeds, but, you know, you do save some of the seeds from last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just, I mean, this is something that human beings have been doing for 10,000 years. It's called being sustainable. And anything that's in the antithesis of being sustainable is a cancer. And what do we do with the cancer?
Cut it out.
Cut it out. Exactly. We cut it. I mean, if you had a cancer on your nose, cut it off. I never noticed that, man. People got a big berry or something like that. Cut it off. Get a toenail.
Hey, it's John Candy and Uncle Buck. Here's a quarter. Go downtown and hire some rat to gnaw that thing off your face.
I love when you say things. I just see the picture. I love it. But seriously, these guys got to be kidding me. They got to be kidding me, bud. What are they talking about? You know, it's not every single CEO out there, but it's a sizable majority of them. You know, it's a sizable majority of them that sit there and use this, you know.
Well, okay, you want a perfect example? Here's a perfect example, Albert. I wander around Democratic Underground from time to time.
Yeah, me too. I'm Klaxon there, by the way, but anyway.
Oh, really? K-L-A?
Yeah.
K-L-A-X-O-N?
Yeah, Klaxon.
Okay, I'll keep an eye out. Somebody started a thread last night that said, Walmart to ask for bailout. And I clicked on it, and of course it was some wise ass saying, ha ha, made you look. And, you know, me, I just, you know, I responded to the poster and I said, I only looked because it seemed perfectly reasonable to me that they would do that. It's the, you know, it's the thing for corporate America to do right now. Hey, yeah, let's go get a big check from the dummies. Right? I mean,
I don't know who it is, and that's a, you know, it's a damn good little pose. It's called baiting, and that's a damn good bait right there, because it's something that you can absolutely picture and believe and you'll see happening in reality, and they will. You know, and this is Walmart. You know, I'll tell you what, I can't wait. I long for the day. Now, anybody who's ever traveling around the country, you will know that the number one company on the road in terms of trucks are Walmart, and second is UPS.
Yeah.
And then whomever after. But those two are the dominant, and Walmart smokes UPS by like a factor of like three. So it's one of these things that I know a lot of people work for them, but I don't see, like, you guys' commercial that you guys made. There aren't a lot of smiling faces in that store.
No. There's no smiling faces in that store. In fact, if you go smilingly to a worker there, they look. There's that sort of comedic beat, and, you know, while they're processing the fact that you're smiling. On the other hand, I go to Kroger, which is a union shop,
mm-hmm.
and I got a smile, they got a smile. Big difference.
Yeah.
You know, but Wally World, for God's sakes, you know, I just flashed on this little thing, and the CEO of Wally World sitting in the boardroom saying, "Oh, gee, America, all the Hepcat corporations are doing it. Why can't we?" Now, Ward, if we pay for Beaver, we need to do it for Wally, too. That's where we are. This is, you know, for all that Ronnie Reagan did, Albert, in trying to castigate the welfare queen, that was a brilliant piece of diversion. Because the welfare queen isn't pulling up to the Salvation Army to get Thanksgiving dinner groceries in a Cadillac. They're pulling up to the Congress of the United States in $36 million Lear jets and Gulfstream 12s.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And they're not black. They are lily white.
That's right.
And they've got their hand out and their tin cups. Can you help a poor chief executive officer who's down on his luck?
Exactly. I mean,
see, the rest of us go to Atlantic City or Vegas or one of those tinny, cheap, tawdry little things on the Gulf Coast or Tunica, Mississippi or up in the woods and play little computer video games for quarter slots or nickel slots. Corporate America doesn't do that. They go to Congress,
mm-hmm.
And Congress listens, because their Congress is base. Look, Albert, I mean, I'm not trying to hijack the conversation or anything, but I got a news story sitting here that was on the list for this evening.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just share the opening couple of paragraphs.
Let me take a Valium here.
Drink the juice with the gin. It's a CNN story. Before being sworn in or casting their first votes, some newly elected members of Congress were introduced Wednesday to another hallmark of life on Capitol Hill, the big-ticket reception for big-money donors. 22 Democrats, who are freshmen, who told voter after voter that they were going to Washington for change. 22 Democrats who will be joining the House of Representatives in January, along with a Democrat who faces a delayed election contest in December, were the invited guests of honor at the, quote, 2008 Red to Blue New Member Debt Retirement Reception, unquote, at Democratic National Committee headquarters. The 8:30 a.m. events invitation from House Commerce Committee Chairman John Dingell and House Natural Resources Committee Chairman Nick Rahal, my congressman, told lobbyists and other potential donors that, quote, as this historic campaign year comes to a close, these newest members of Congress need your help in retiring their campaign debt. Pardon me just a moment, Albert. I hope the girls aren't in their bullshit.
Yeah.
Because you know why I call bullshit on that? Because those 22 Democrats, 22 people who were advanced by, and I'm not gooning on the organizations, their intentions were good. The organizations like, the Blue Campaigns at Crooks and Liars, or the Blue Campaign at Democratic Underground, or the Blue Campaign here, or the Blue Campaign there, they rounded up millions of dollars.
Yeah.
$5 at a time from people like you and me, who just wanted to say that we had a hand in sending someone, practically anyone, to Congress that we thought would not play the same old sleazy, tawdry, crappy, miserable, bought-off, bribed-up games. And we gave them the money out of our sweat, our labor, our wallets. We denied ourselves to put them there. And they have the nerve to show up to a lobbyist K Street-driven sleaze fest like that because they've got a retired debt. We made it possible for them not to have debt. I'm not yelling at you.
No.
The invitation encourages donors to sign up at levels ranging from a $20,000 PAC host to a $2,500 individual friend. Wow, last time I paid $2,500 to a friend, I counted the days to see if it was going to hurt when I peed.
you know, outrageous. It's so outrageous. Who are these guys? You know, what do we do to fix? This is the thing, though. I mean, we can sit here and jump up and down and slap our heads against the wall until our eyes fall out. You know, what do we do about this?
Rick Fenton was at the big party. He's a lobbyist, and of course, and he said, well, no, I'm not here to buy access to future lawmakers. No, absolutely no. Rick Fenton specializes in mining issues. He said he planned to give $5,000 to several of the new representatives. We're just educators, and we provide an important function as an education function.
Really?
Yeah. Fenton works for an organization called Klein and Sachs Group. One of their clients is a little outfit that we're fairly familiar with here in the hills and hollers called the National Mining Association. Yeah. And the one thing... okay. Here, let's read off the roll of shame. See if you recognize any names.
That's what I was hoping. Okay.
New Jersey, 3rd District, John Adler was at the party. Mm-hmm. Bobby Bright from Alabama's 2nd District was at the party. Paul Carmouche from Louisiana. You know, I got a fundraising letter from, you know, one of those blast emails from the old snakehead, Carville, the other day. Talking about, well, we need another $50 million to make sure Paul Carmouche, a good Louisianan, gets elected. Kathy Dahlkemper from Pennsylvania's 3rd District was there. Alan Grayson from Florida's 8th District was there. Parker Griffith from Alabama's 5th District was there. Martin Heinrich of New Mexico's 1st. Jim Himes of Connecticut's 4th. Is this the guy who replaced Chris Shays?
Yeah, I think so.
Ann Kirkpatrick from Arizona's 1st. Larry Kissel from North Carolina's 8th. Suzanne Cosmas from Florida's 24th. Frank Kratovly. Frank Kratovly from Maryland's 1st, Ben Ray Lujan from New Mexico's 3rd, Betsy Markey from Colorado's 4th. She replaced Marilyn Musgrave, who was just absolutely crazier than a sprayed roach. I mean, she made Michelle Bachmann and that goofy woman from Tennessee look positively normal. Who else? Eric Massa from New York's 29th. Walter Minnick from Idaho's 1st, Glenn Nye from Virginia's 2nd, Tom Periello from Virginia's 5th, Gary Peters from Michigan's 9th, Shelley Pingree from Maine's 1st, Mark Schauer from Michigan's 7th, Kurt Schrader from Oregon's 5th, and Harry Teague from New Mexico's 2nd. They're all newbies, and they're all bought and paid for now. And guess what?
Yeah.
The $5 you sent, the $10 you scraped together, the stickers you put on your car, the door knocking you did, the signs you put in your yards, don't matter squat now, because meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
That's right. Amen right there. Can't say amen anymore. Indeed. And that Kirkpatrick, whatever that is, you know, I can swear I've heard that one on Nova M quite a few times, and I wonder what our old buddy Mike Malloy would have to say about that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
No, these people just make me want to chew my lips off, because I honestly, you know, when Dave said I think he said it last week, he said he doesn't feel like he belongs in this planet. I totally understand that. I completely. I don't think I've ever heard anything I self-identify with more than feeling like this is a planet, that if there is any sort of afterlife, if we're some sort of beings of energy, I'm not coming back here. This place is mad. It's madness. It's so absurd. It's ridiculous. It's like anything that you could imagine that would be something that would be completely outrageous to consider is true. That's the reality of it. It's like, nah, they can't be that scummy. They are. Nah, they couldn't take that much. They do. They would. Yes, they are. It's everything they. No, they wouldn't. It's like, you know.
Yeah, they did.
I feel like that part in Schindler's List, it's like there's a part of that movie that's haunting to me. It's not the girl in the red dress. It's not anything else like that. It's when all this, the older Jewish people are sitting around a fire in the street, and they're saying, oh, they'd never kill us. We're their workforce. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how I feel. That's what I feel like, and I feel like that's kind of in a sense... You know, all right, so they're knocking us down step by step by step by step by step, and the cruel reality still hasn't sunk in. You know, the fact that the Dow is at 7,500 or whatever the heck it is now hasn't sunk in. People don't get it because they don't. It doesn't matter to them, but it will. It's going to hit us on a lag. It's coming. It's coming. Some people called it. Some people knew it. Some people paid attention and saw, but it's coming. Now, I can't tell you if it's going to be forever. I can't tell you that it's not going to, you know, it may. It very well may. You know, these guys are sitting there with their hands out. And who the hell, who sets up the rules like this? Bob, if you get fired, you're fired, Bob. Here's a check for $25 million. Have a good time. What? What? Who gets that? How the hell do you get that deal? How? How does that happen?
We don't live on the right side of those tracks, Albert.
Well,
I mean, look, not to turn this into a commercial or anything, but, you know, I covered the story, what, 2-3 days ago about the fact that 20% of Focus on the Family's workforce is being laid off because they're down $1 million a month from last year.
Yeah.
$1 million a month. Mm-hmm. I can't even round up $2 grand a month to keep this thing going. And people are busting their ass. Maybe, you know, maybe I take this a little bit more seriously because I recognize by virtue of my own circumstances and my own friends and understanding and knowing the circumstances because, you know, this is a rather intimate little family we have going on here. I understand how hard people work for whatever they put forward to make this keep going. And it's almost like a religious epiphany to the extent that I have them. I understand what it means when somebody sends $5, $10, $100 to the horn. I know what they're cutting themselves out of. Because they believe in this. And so I have to be here every night. And I have to do everything in my power to be as candid and straight up and honest as I can be. Because anything less is dishonorable to the people who keep this conversation going. I don't think politicians of any stripe, very few of them, have anything approaching that reverence. I just don't.
You're a beautiful human being, Bob.
I don't know that I am, and I'm sorry if I did turn it into a commercial, but
no.
You know, you said, look, there are people out there who believe in regenerated zombie gods and people who believe in flying spaghetti monsters and people who believe in all kinds of things. Any one of them or probably all of them are right to some degree or another. So what's to keep you and me from believing that, in fact, this thing we call life, this thing that happens between birth, which we don't remember, and death, which we don't remember, who's to say that this isn't a test? Who's to say that the key to moving on in the universe has something to do with being presented things like, you know, the world on a silver platter, like the big three from Detroit have had presented to them, and not showing up in a jet to ask for money. You know, who's to say that that's not one of those little check boxes on the universal scorecard that go, no, sorry, you just failed. Dude, enjoy the rest of it. Because I've got this crazy notion that, you know, and Jung was the one, I think, who identified it, Albert, first off, or at least formally within Western parameters, that there are archetypes.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's the Fisher King or the Virgin Mother or any number of things that are recognizable throughout culture, you know, There's a flood myth in Central America. There's a flood myth in the Middle East, and there's a flood myth in China. This doesn't mean that everybody had a worldwide flood. This means that there's an archetypal memory of what devastation truly means.
Yeah.
And who's to say that the archetypal memory of some sort of heaven or hell or absence of nirvana isn't a reflection of what may actually be? That maybe there's some sort of a culling that takes place after death, where the energy, and it's just a tiny spark, the energy that it takes to animate life happens a million times in driving a mile in your car to the grocery store in terms of the spark coming off your spark plugs. It's just a tiny spark. Mm-hmm. But the spark reintegrates into the universe in different forms. And if you have spent your time here on this planet screwing with people, not caring about 4,000 dead Colombians, in walking by hungry people, that your spark doesn't get to go back to the rest of the universe, that you get sucked down a black hole, maybe. Who's to say that? I mean, you know, flying spaghetti monster, volcano, the beer volcano in a stripper factory.
Yeah.
Who's to say that that Yeshua wasn't tapping into an archetype when he said, if you've not fed the hungry, if you've not housed the neat, the homeless, if you've not clothed the naked, if you've not visited those in prison, if you've not done any of that, if you've not done it to the least of those my brothers, you've not done it also unto me. And there is a lake of eternal fire prepared for you with the devil and his angels. Who's to say he wasn't tapping into one of those archetypes? Because
mm-hmm.
every culture on the earth at some point in time says the same thing.
Yeah, it's like a universal truth. It's like telling your kids that all they got is each other. And, you know, they better take care of each other because that's kind of the, you know, that's what we got in this life. And there are certain, you know, there are certain veils that are put in front of this. And these are these things that, I don't know, it's like, you know, we feel our way along life, you know, I think for most of it, you know, we just kind of feel our way like in the dark. And
that's because it's an improv. You know, there's no dress. This ain't dress rehearsal. And it's all improv.
Mm-hmm.
And we do feel our way along in the dark. And we stub our toes. But the question is, when we stub our toes on the bedstead, do we take the bedstead out in the back and burn it?
Tell others that it's there?
Yeah, or do we say, hey, the bed's over there here in this darkness. Don't stub your toe like I did. Seems fair to me, Albert.
It's the way it is for me. It's not about dressers, less our dreams, but that's a whole other conversation. We just gotta realize, and maybe these bastards are being so outrageous because something has to bust through this apathy. You know, something has to burst through, and you believe that and this, and I could certainly take certain of those points. I don't really know what we are. I don't know what there is afterwards, and nobody does. You know, I have feelings of things of that nature. I happen to think that we're life, and life is this ongoing evolution. And I believe, you know, I believe my own little quirks. I've always kind of believed. I believed I was before, and I believe I will be after, and maybe not this in terms of this physical body, but that's looking down at my arms and hands right now, but in some form or another, in this energy that is energy. And, you know, it may not have much voltage, but it has plenty of amps. And the amps run deep, and the amps run to what powers the sun and what powers everything. So it's kind of one of these things where there are those that just want to be, you know, parasites and just be sitting there just being sinks for this energy. And there are those that realize that that's not the right way. And sometimes I think if you want to move a ball bearing on a piece of fabric, you kind of have to make depressions and each side this way, that way, just to kind of get this ball moving. I don't think that this, I think it's going to be hard. I remember you saying, when I said this kind of stuff to you earlier, you know, things have scared you, and it is scary, and then not everybody's going to make it. You know, I'm not being, you know, flippant with it. I might not make it. My kids might not make it. Okay, I realize this. My dog might not. I'm going to have to eat my dog. God, no, I'm going to have to eat you up, buddy. But, yeah, you're going, bud. Don't look at me like that. He's got those big eyes. Just look at
really, Dad?
Ooh, no, Gonzo. I heard you're good with adobo. But anyway, I happened to be in the Navy once. Guy was eating dog adobo. But anyway, black dog, the best.
Hey, Grandpa, what's for supper?
Gonzo's for supper. Aww.
Gonzo, it's what's for dinner.
It's what's for dinner. He's it'd be red meat, I would think, but it looked like chicken to me. But anyway, you know,
stop.
I don't upset anybody. I know, I'll stop. I know, everybody getting upset. Oh, don't talk like that. Not my dog. But, you know, I mean, I think it's going to be rough, but at the same time, I think this pain, I think the pain that we're about to get, I hope Barack Obama, I know he's been making some.
I'm in the same place, Albert. And I just keep, a long, long time ago, I committed to memory a very short Latin aphorism. I think it came from Horace. And it says, per fer et obdura, dolor hic tibi proderit olim. Be patient and tough. Someday this pain will be useful to you.
That's a good one.
Yeah, you know, that's a lot more elegant than that which does not kill us makes us stronger. And there are no stories of Horace going absolutely sprayed roach crazy later in his life from contemplating his navel and staring into the abyss.
As it stares back.
Yeah. And well, says, brugada, brugada, brugada.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I hope this time it's for keeps. I mean, you know, I don't want to get too hooky pooky on us, but because it isn't prayer meeting. But, you know, I kind of look at it, you know, I think there's important distinctions to make when you look at things. And, you know, I don't know how much of this is extrapolated New Ageism applied to ancient mythology or extinct civilizations, but hey, you're going to be hearing more and more about it, and you might as well have as much information as you possibly can. It's just weird how we're looking at all this crap, as gourmet as it may be. We're looking at this kind of stuff happening in terms of relation to the Mayan end date of the current calendar. And I don't want to get too hokey-pokey on it, because I don't really believe that the world's going to end and blow up. I mean, even though it looks like the fuse is lit and everybody, you know, we're headed off a cliff. But I kind of think what it may very well be, I like to put the positive spin on it, and because of the fact that the next calendar after Sauron is reported to be the 5,000 years of the Golden Age. And while I certainly see the potential for massive, horrible devastation, and I mean, if we continue the way that we were continuing in the 90s and the 80s and the 70s and the 60s and so on, if we continue that in that kind of mindset, which I don't think we're really holding on to, I don't think it's sticking. It's like that super sticker that you had on your car and it's finally rusting away or it's finally peeling off in the sun. I don't think that that mindset of greed is good. He who dies with the most toys wins. I think that kind of stuff is becoming an abomination. It's becoming one of those things that is literally looked upon by other people that are pulling their head up from, you know, looking at their navels, and they're saying, wait a minute, what? Are you kidding me? I mean, you know, and I feel like the first shakings of this were what was electing Barack Obama, regardless to the actual content of his true nature. If he really is going to be putting, I hope he doesn't put Hillary Clinton, but let's say he does, and he does, and he does, and he does, and he's no better than any of these others. He's no better than Bill Clinton, who set himself up and is now pulling in $500 million to cure AIDS. I mean, maybe he should just talk to Magic Johnson, because Magic Johnson's still bouncing around. And, you know, I mean, God, he's had AIDS for 30 years now. So he knows something, you know. Maybe he's taking his Flintstone vitamins. I don't know. But, you know, I mean, we're sitting here looking at a world where dudes get fired for sucking and, you know, firing 40,000 people and making 40,000 people live life of hardship and find other jobs and all this other stuff. I mean, we don't even have a true number to the account to the magnitude of this situation yet. We don't even have that. Everybody's just kind of like laying low and they got their head in the trenches and they're just kind of trying to get away and get by. And I mean, heck, I don't even talk to my neighbors anymore. I don't even see them. I mean, it's one of the, and I live in a little tiny small town.
I know, the hunker down has come to America.
It certainly has. And, you know, I just want to kind of get it out there that, you know, if this is true, and this is one of these things that, you know, it doesn't matter. It's like one of these things that once you know it, it's too late. You can't ever unknow it. Some things that you've seen cannot be unseen. These things, now that you know that this is the way it is, you can never, like, once you know, I'm telling you, Bob, you're going to sit there and you're going to go. You're going to sit there and you're going to go pick up bananas and your hand is going to freeze. As the Lord grabs it. Anyway, and your hand is going to freeze, and you're going to say, no, hell no. I am not buying that. Screw it. I'll go without bananas. And you won't. And eventually that'll move on to another product, and another product, and another product, and another product. And you moving this on to another person moves it on to another person. And pretty soon, these sons of bitches at Chiquita, they can't sell a single banana. And hopefully, you know, people realize that by, you know, and so not to be communist, but not to be any, but by solidarity. You know, I was watching I've never seen the show. You know, I don't watch TV, but I do like to watch shows if they're a good show. And I've been hearing about how good The West Wing is and this and this and that. And I kind of think, it was like, man, I should have been watching this show. I would have been a little bit more relaxed because it was kind of like everything that we should have had during George Bush's president but didn't, that kind of thing. That's kind of what I saw with that show. But you know, they were talking about something. They were arguing about putting a piece of something about Mao said into the speech, and it was along the lines of a permanent revolution. Now, all right, Mao was a dirty bastard, but you know, that's a damn good idea, a permanent revolution. We need a permanent. We can't ever sit here and stay stagnant, because what we are doing right now is being stagnant. We're allowing these car companies to be stagnant. We're allowing these guys to sit there and they're like beavers. They're like beavers, and they're just jamming up and damming up all the freaking lakes and all the current, and they're stopping it up, and it's getting fetid and disgusting because they're filthy animals. They don't care. They don't care what shape that water's in. They don't care what shape their environment's in. All they know is they got their little dam, they got their little thing, and you know, they got it all. They don't care if the beavers down the way starve. They could care less, because they've got what they need. They're at the top of the river, and so, you know, they're the ones that sit there and they can travel in their gold-plated jets. And I mean, hell, if somebody owns a restaurant and they don't eat there, you shouldn't either. And if somebody owns a car company and they don't drive that car, you probably shouldn't either.
Well, there was a great one-liner from Conan or Letterman or Leno last night, in which he said the big three auto executives were asked what they would do if they got the $25 billion bailout, and they all answered, buy a BMW.
you want an Audi. You don't want the Beamer. But
well, you know, that's the difference. You know, an Audi will have the common good manners to break down in your driveway, whereas the BMW will wait until you're as far from home as you can possibly be and as far from a BMW parts place as you can possibly be, and then it'll go south.
That is kind of true.
Well, you know, there are truisms. That's like the English sports cars. If there's no oil on the floor, there's no oil in the car.
They do love their cars, the British. You can't say that.
Oh, I love. Are you kidding? And the beautiful old MGA or. Look, you know, I'm a creature of the internal combustion age. You know what I'd love to see? I'd love to see an MG midget with the Tesla power plant in it.
You just opened another door. Okay, here we go. There wasn't just a new car show. Did you see what they had? See, this is why I get hopeful. This is why I get hopeful. Right? I get hopeful in terms of the collective consciousness, because I see this. I see all of a sudden they have the Mini E. Now that's not obvious. That's obviously not the little Spitfire you're talking about, but they had all kinds of little cars. And they're all electric. They're either electric or they're hybrids. They're diesel electric hybrids. You know, so now they're like the old submarines and stuff from World War II and the U-boats. you know, but they are making them. They're sitting there and they're listening to this. And so essentially what we really, I think what we need to do is keep this talk alive. We have to keep this little spark alive. We got to be like those guys in Quest for Fire, and we got to keep that spark alive until we figure out how to make our own fire. And once
personally, I think it's a cross between Quest for Fire and The Gods Must Be Crazy.
Yeah, it probably is. But that's true too. Come on now. I mean, you know, it is kind of like that, and we got to realize that what we're fighting over is junk. You know, if you ever watch the movie Spirited Away, which is the Hayao Miyazaki film, which is not a Disney film. There's no singing and dancing and, you know, like a typical Disney film.
What? No dancing hippopotami?
Yeah, none of that. If you haven't seen this film yet. Have you seen this film?
No, I have not
Spirited
seen it.
Away?
Oh, no.
Rent it. Go now. Go download it. Do something. Watch this movie with your family, okay? I remember the first time I watched it, I cried. And he's made a bunch of films that will make you cry. One of them is Valley of the Fireflies, which is about the atomic bomb of Hiroshima. And, you know, this boy and his young sister, it's just heartbreaking. But it's cartoons that aren't really kind of for kids, like, but at the same time, they're better than the other kind of cartoons.
Kind of like Wizards.
Better. Even more. Even more. Wizards is a little more scary. Like, this is scary. But scary, I don't know. You know how Disney throws those jokes in there so parents like it, but it's always like some sexual crap?
Yeah.
You know? And
And
it's just like so insulting. He doesn't do that. He makes it multi-layered in levels of comprehension.
Yeah, I remember Lumiere and the thing that got turned back into a naughty French maid at the end of Disney's Beauty and the Beast. Yeah, that was there for the grown-ups.
Yeah, and we don't need that. There's plenty of time for that later, you know. But you know, you don't need that as little kids. But what we're talking about here is in terms of Spirited Away. They basically, you know, just to make a long story short, I just kind of want to get to this point where they had this beast in there that was eating and eating and eating and eating and eating and eating, and he ate everything. He constantly was eating, and he was eating people that worked there, and there he's eating this. But he had gold, and he could basically pour gold out of his hands. So he's pouring gold out of his hands, and just that's all they could see is, oh, my God, gold. And they're just, you know, all these little spirits and this and that are just grabbing the gold. And they have all this gold, and next thing you know, they finally get rid of this guy, and the guy, you know, winds up, and you'll see what happens. And finally they sit there, and they're sitting there, and they look, and the gold goes, and it turns into dirt. And the little frog goes, it's just dirt. But that's what gold is anyway. It's just dirt. That's all it is. It's freaking dirt, and we're over here fighting wars over it. We're over here killing people and subjugating each other to
permutations on dirt, Albert. Whether it's banana dirt or gold dirt or oil dirt or coal dirt.
Dirt, dust to dust, you know, dust to dust, ashes to ashes, whatever you want to call it, dirt. And we're treating each other and enslaving each other over this. And I think that whole mindset, that's what we need to just, you know, evacuate that from our mind. We, in a sense, you know, and I know you don't like them, but, you know, in terms of the soliloquy of the cave, these chains are imaginary. This stuff only has power over us to such a degree that we let it have power.
That we give it the power. Sure.
Exactly. We feed this beast. We feed it. We feed it. We pet it. We worship it. We constantly are doing these things that give it strength in this illusion. And, you know, as the great prophet Bill Hicks, peace be upon him, said, this is all just a ride. This is just a ride. I've never heard such truth in my entire life. You know, you can feel it in your blood. And you can feel it in your solar plexus when you hear that. This is just a ride. We can look at it through the eyes of fear or through the eyes of love. If we look at it through the eyes of love, it'll be a much better ride, and you may want to return to it, you know. Or you can look at it through the eyes of fear, and you can let these fat cats, you know, that always have controlled things, kind of control things. And I think what we're looking at here is, you know, Is a fundamental permanent revolution. We need to make a revolution that will sit there and be a revolution in all aspects. It never has to stop. It never has to be totalitarian or despotism or, you know, it doesn't ever have to be. Anything has to be limited. This is ridiculous. We are sitting here spinning on a... I'm going to curse because this shit pisses me off. We're sitting here on a planet spinning around in space. What the hell are we doing? We're fighting over this crap and killing each other over bananas. It's ridiculous. This is such... Oh, if these were my kids, they'd be in a corner with spanking.
Oh, also Sprock Zarathustra about now. Yeah. Monkey, bone, meat monolith. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Seriously.
I know. But, you know, for his free form and improv, as our conversations always are, Albert, and what a delight they are. And I know they are as much a delight for the audience as they are for me. And I hope they are for you. There's something essentially human about this. I found a recording the other night of some famous Greek scholar reading the entire Iliad. And you know the funny part of it is that if you just sit there and turn out all the lights and nothing is glowing but your computer screen, and the only thing you're hearing is that voice, whether you speak Greek or not, knowing the story, you can follow it.
That's right.
And the same thing goes for the really oldie English version of a recitation of Beowulf.
That's right.
Or the Latin reading of the Aeneid.
Mm-hmm.
Or the creation myths of the Popol Vuh. Sooner or later, it has a way of making sense. Because you rub the sleep out of that third eye. And it sees things, and those third and fourth ears hear things that we don't know that we can see and hear. And it's there. And what I hope that people get out of this is to understand that we're not powerless. We're not. We're separated. We are segmented. And those are all incredibly deliberate acts. They are the most deliberate acts of Western civilization. Because, well, you know, I've got another story here as we wind down the program, Albert. I've got another story here from this from a right-wing website that sort of leads me in the direction of recognizing what we can actually accomplish. This is not a wire story. This is by this weird-ass right-wing site. The possible signing of the Freedom of Choice Act by President-elect Barack Obama would be, quote, the equivalent of a war, unquote, an unnamed senior Vatican official recently told Time magazine. Speaking at the Catholic University of America a few days ago, Vatican Cardinal James Stafford labeled Obama's anti-life policies as, quote, aggressive, disruptive, and apocalyptic, also noting that, quote, on November 4th, 2008, America suffered a cultural earthquake. And they're talking about excommunications and whether it's automatic or not, and what will happen to the Catholic lawmakers who vote in favor of the Freedom of Choice Act. And I was reminded of those stirring, monstrously true words from Voltaire. Man will only be free. You know this one, don't you? Man will only be free when the last king is strangled to death with the entrails of the last priest.
Oh, I was thinking Volkoff. Yeah, that's actually beautiful, too. Yeah, okay.
The excommunication is automatic if that act is, in fact, formal cooperation, and that is precisely what would have to be discussed once you would see the terms of the act itself. the categories in moral theology about cooperating in evil, which make you complicit in the evil even though you don't do it yourself, are material cooperation, which is usually remote and therefore... But see, they won't apply that to Eric Holder. And they won't apply that to the Pope himself, who is personally burning up an entire continent because he thinks that Jesus doesn't like condoms.
But you see, that's also part of the division, brother. You know, this division is, in a sense, you know, you got to say this in a sense. You know, there are three capitals of the earth, and they're all nation states. And one of them is the Vatican. Okay?
Yeah.
The other one, London. And the other one, the next one, the last one, is in Washington, D.C., the mall. Okay? All three of these places, they're the city states, right, of the world. You got the city-state of spiritualism, okay, and you got which is in the Vatican. You got the city-state of finance, which is in London, and then the city-state of military might, which is in Washington. And in a sense, I sit here and I look at that and I hear this crap. I mean, I know always time is limited, but I can go into such a rant regarding the fundamental, in your face, right under your nose, reality of what the Vatican religion really is. It's a sun cult. And in all strengths, and this, if anything would ever get me my brakes line snipped, it'd probably be this. It's a sun cult. Okay? These guys, that's what they're talking about when they talk about Horus and all this and the eye that's on our money and this stuff's all there for a reason. They don't put any of this stuff there. They put them kind of crap out for one reason and one reason only. They put that out there to divide us. And they can't anymore. You know, that's the best part of the best movie of the best of the trilogy, which was The Matrix, was that very last sentence. That's what we have to embody. We have to embody that. We have to embody that, you know, you try to keep people separate, you try to keep them afraid, but you're not allowed to do that anymore. That is not something that we can tolerate. We cannot tolerate this division of flying spaghetti monsters and this and that when they ain't even true to the nature of what their religion is. Oh, am I offending you? Well, go look it up. Go look and see. Why do these people dress as Amanthia muscaria mushrooms? Why do they sit here and talk about a cross? Why do they sit here and do all these things? They do all these things because these things have symbolic representations of our ancient archetypal religions that
now through the beauty of mass marketing and our friends at the American Family Association, you can have an electric burning cross in your yard this Christmas season.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing, ain't it?
Yeah, it is. It's one of these things, and they play this game. You know, I mean, I thought the Pope hated the Bushes, but the Bushes for anti-abortion. But I thought he hated them, and he was just a big sinner. And they always play this drama. This is the same crap. It's like watching Friends nonstop. It's the same show after a while, over and over again. And if you've ever seen the
which reminds me, I'm ashamed of myself, but I'll be watching a television show tonight. Because there's some of the thought-provoking stuff of this conversation that happens in it periodically. And that's coming up in an hour on ABC. Life on Mars.
Oh, I keep hearing good things about it.
Yeah, the guy who plays the lead seems to have gone to the Mel Gibson School of Acting because he's got all those funky facial tics going for him.
Mm-hmm.
But I just kind of try to overlook that.
Mm-hmm.
Because the rest of it's rather thought-provoking. Harvey Keitel does not do bad work. Harvey Keitel would not mail in, he wouldn't mail in a toothpaste commercial.
Mm-hmm.
There was a thing last week, where a woman, there was a hostage situation inside a mental hospital in the lockdown ward, and this girl came up to the lead character and said, "Listen, I've been in here undercover. I'm really a reporter, all right? I'm researching the abuses of mental patients. But now it looks like I'm covering a hostage situation instead." And a little bit later, the psychiatrist comes up to her and says, "That girl over there, did she come over and tell you she's a reporter?" "Well, yeah. She's mad. She's a paranoid schizophrenic."
Yeah, right.
That's her thing.
Yeah.
And
there a woman that did that in reality?
No, there may have been. Or a moment, because this guy's been time transported to 1973 from 2008.
Ah, okay.
It's a cross between, it's a cross between Quantum Leap, Twin Peaks, and NYPD Blue.
Ah, cool.
With and it's all an homage to Kurt Vonnegut and Billy Pilgrim's Come Unstuck in Time.
Oh, sweet.
Or at least that's the way I read it. They were investigating the murder of a Vietnam veteran in one episode, and all the bigotry, all these bigotries were coming out and being voiced in the room, and the character from 2008 turned around and said, you know, because it all takes place in New York, you know, all this stuff is going to come back on you. And it's going to do things, this hate is going to do things to this city that you can't even imagine. Obvious reference to September 11th.
Mm-hmm. Well, or the Crown Heights riots, or, you know, there's a tons of things that have happened.
It's got all kinds of cute stuff, like when he gets asked out to go to the movies to see the new Woody Allen movie, Sleeper. And he says, oh, that's going to be an instant classic. It's only been out for a week. Runs into Jim Croce in a bar and says, stay off of small aircraft.
Oh, boy, wouldn't that be...
And these beautiful little flashbacks that take place, like in the bar when he looks over and suddenly he sees a kid standing there with a Smells Like Teen Spirit Nirvana album cover T-shirt on.
Mm.
Yeah. It's worth the effort. You might hate it, but it's as far as that kind of stuff goes, it's damned enjoyable. But Albert, we're out of time, brother. Thanks a lot for a wonderful conversation.
Thank you, Bob. It's been, you keep me sane, brother. That's all I can say.
You've done a lot of the same for me this evening. Take care, Albert.
All right, you too, buddy.
Tell the girls good night.
Oh, you too.
All right.
Give my love to everybody.
Bye-bye. We'll do. Bye bye. Resident philosopher Albert in Wisconsin. That's it. Thanks for a wonderful evening. Plenty of stuff left over, and I'm sure more stuff will arise tomorrow. But give some thought. I don't mean to just sit here and rant and go crazy. But take a few minutes and just try to imagine the lives, those 4,000 lives in Colombia, and see if you can get to a place in your own soul where it's okay for the lawyer, for the company who paid for those 4,000 lives to be snuffed out to be Attorney General of the United States. It doesn't matter which way you come down, but for Christ's sakes, honor those 4,000 dead murdered by right-wing death squads, murdered by fascists in the name of corporate America. Take a few minutes, just a few, to honor the fact that they walked upon this planet once and had hopes and dreams just like you. Please. That's the show. Thanks, John Fox. Thanks, Peter Godbold. Thanks, Ben Birch. Thank you, Coal River Mountain Watch, the hardest working, bravest people I know. They stand up in the face of threats similar to what goes on in Colombia. And right now, the coal companies don't quite have the nerve to do to them what gets done to people in Colombia. But we're not that far from a day when they'll feel emboldened to do it. That's why they're the bravest people I know. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you give me!
So this was fun.
We're gonna
like
this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Keep countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show. It's been a while due to fate and circumstances and all that, but we're back, and we're glad to be back. Hope you all have had a good week so far. We have experienced a trying and difficult day here today, and we'll explain a little bit of that in a moment or two, but I hope it's nice where you are. It's somewhat chilly here in Southwest Florida today. Only about, 68 degrees. Got down to about low 40s last night. Highly unusual for this time of year. Usually just just a little smidgen of January. We usually have about 3 or 4 days in January where it gets like this. But my goodness, quite cool here today. Not that I mind. It feels pretty good, actually. Get up in the morning and have a nice, crisp, cool morning. Yes, it does. Welcome to the show. Good to have you with us today. We do hope you'll join us here on the show. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. I would like to thank Elaine and the whole gang down at the Democratic Women's Club of Collier County. I spoke there, and it was certainly nice to meet with those ladies. Always a good bunch of women Democrats, let me tell you, to the core, to the bone, and always enjoy talking to them. So thanks for inviting me. I had a good time, as always. Much going on, making our plans to go to Washington for the inaugural. Seems as though it's going to be a difficult trek, to say the least. We've been warned about